Oh, hi. So nice to see you back in the bookshop again so soon. We are in the bookshop, as always. We're going to have a lovely time. We've got some cookies. We've got some cups of coffee.
Everything.
Oh, hey, Sam's here. Hi,
who's
Sam.
This?
Oh, this is our lovely listener who's here joining us in the bookshop.
I didn't mean to go, so sexy.
Well, you know.
Oh,
Sam being sexy again.
How are you?
Is he being sexy again?
We were just talking about how sexy the listeners are.
Oh, I bet they are.
Very.
Hi, guys.
Hi, Natalie. Hey. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you.
Here we are. Oh. All four of us plus everyone else.
It's nice to be back, isn't it?
It's lovely. Mm-hmm. This is rapidly becoming one of my favourite places to be.
Well, good, because you spend a lot of time here.
I do. I spend quite a lot of my time here. Some people might say it's a bit sad or obsessive, but I just think it's dedication and passion.
Absolutely.
The things that I love in life.
Perfect.
Books.
Books.
Listeners.
Listeners. Cookies.
All that stuff.
All that stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant.
It's a good old time. Coffee.
Yeah.
Tables. Anyway, here we are back in the bookshop. So nice to have you all here. Are we all ready for another meeting of the bookshop book club? I've been really excited.
This is our third session.
This is our third
Woo!
Session.
Oh yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
The book club is becoming a regular feature now.
Oh yeah.
Settling in.
Into it.
So yeah. Who'd like to kick us off?
I don't mind.
All right, Dale. What's your read of the month? Of the session?
Well, this month I was reading The Travelling Cat Chronicles by Hiro Arikawa. Very good book, by the way. Yeah. It's a book about a cat. You are the cat. It's written from the cat.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It starts as a stray in Japan, in Tokyo. So it's a rough and ready street cat living under cars, all this kind of stuff. But then it gets an owner and gets a name. And all this stuff. And the whole point of it is that they're going around with his owner to try and find a new home for the cat. Right? So you're like, seeing all this from the cat's perspective, it's got loads of lovely wee bits about how cats feel about humans.
Nice.
You know how we think that, you know, that cats like us. They don't really, according to this cat.
So what does he say?
He said he kind of manipulates us.
Oh.
It's like, if I let him stroke me, maybe he'll feed me this. Or he's only allowed to stroke me once he's done this. You know, and it's all very... manipulative behaviour. It's really cheekily written and brilliant.
When you said it's from the cat's perspective...
Yeah.
But you are the... Is it in the first person? Or is it like being written to the person that's reading it? Or is it kind of like, is it...
Yeah, I said that wrong. It's basically the cat telling us a story.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So we're not the cat.
We're not the cat.
Now all I can think of is George Galloway.
Oh, God, remember that? That was so weird. But anyway, let's get back to serious literature. It's really, really good. I read it on the plane to Berlin and I cried on the plane.
Oh,
wow.
Powerful stuff there.
Nice.
Yeah. No, it's a really, really great book. I can't talk too much about it because there's a huge amount of...
Does the cat die?
No.
Oh.
Fuck. I was about to say I'm not going to talk about it because of spoilers. That's not a real spoiler, is it?
Well, the cat doesn't die.
The cat doesn't die.
Yeah.
Does he die 8 times?
There's that website, isn't there, called Does the Dog Die? Lists any old movies. And it has like loads of different... So it has like dogs and it has other things. It has like... Does the dog die? Does other animals die? Or like just other things that people like would quite reasonably might want to avoid? In like, I think they quite recently added a section to it about does the LGBTQ person die? Or like does something bad happen to that? Like,
does someone drown?
Like particular things that like people really don't want to see in a movie and they can go and look it up to see. I don't think anyone says that's spoilers.
Like, nothing. I don't know if that would put me off.
Thing I don't want to see things die in a movie. I'm not super in... I don't like watching dogs die in movies.
No, me neither.
I think it's a great device.
It makes you more shocked than a human, doesn't it? Like,
yeah.
You can see two or three Waynes die, you're like, whatever. As soon as a dog dies, you're like, oh my God, you horrible bastard.
That's how you know if someone's really bad. Like,
if they kill a dog.
Because you could go in and you could like murder like 7-8 people and then walk out the bank, like robbing the bank, and you'd still be like, oh, but are they a goodie or a baddie?
Yeah.
But if they shoot the dog as they're walking out, you're like,
That movie Seven Psychopaths, there's a line in it that one of the guys says towards the end, because he's talking a lot through the movie about like Hollywood conventions and tropes, and at one point he says like, you can't ever kill the animals, you can only kill the women, which obviously is like quite a cynical thing to say. It was there more to that. I was just quoting the movie, I didn't know there was actually a story.
Were in the movie, at the end the guy was going to keep the dog hostage and then shoot the dog with the flare gun. But they were like, nah, you can't have that. And it's like, but like five women are killed in this movie. And the guy was like, yeah, you can murder the women, just not the dogs. And like, so then when they rewrote the script, they fucking
they put that into it.
In the script, and he says it all the time. He's like, you can't murder the dog. It's fucking rocker. What's his name?
Sam Rockwell.
That's the word.
Yeah.
And hunky Colin Farrell.
Alcoholic Colin Farrell.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yes, when he's playing an alcoholic.
Alcoholic.
That's a very good film. Very good film. That's a very good book.
Yeah,
I can't say too much about it because it's just littered with spoilers. So, littered cat.
Cat.
Boom.
Brilliant.
Yeah.
Totally top quality.
Now we've started.
I am's cat.
Have you seen the what do you call it? That HBO series. It's called High Something. I can't remember. It's about a weed dealer who lives in New York, and every episode is a standalone episode about one of the people that he sells weed to. So he's like just a device at the start.
Yeah.
Okay. Goes round. It's called High Something, or I can't remember. It's some like pun on like something related with weed. But there's an episode, I think it's the third episode of season one, where he is the story is from the point of view of a dog. And it's just this dog who has a great life. He's like in the house, he's always cutting around, he's got like a big garden, and then the people that own him get divorced and he gets put with the guy, and the guy moves into like a one bedroom apartment.
Oh, no.
He has to be in like a little cage. Oh. Like, and then the eventually the guy like gets a dog walker, and he like falls in love with the dog walker. Oh. And then like escapes, and like it has this whole big adventure, but there's no dialogue in it at all. It's
I
like
30
minutes. Yeah. And it's just you just following this dog about. Aww. And it's like all from the dog's perspective, but it reminded me of that. It's really good.
Dogs dying in things or getting hurt in TV shows is like serious taboo, but I feel like cats like getting hurt in TV shows gets used for comedy quite a lot more, because it makes that like noise. Like if you punt a cat in a TV, not that you ever should in real life, but like maybe I've just fabricated this in my mind.
You sounded like James Brown.
wasn't James Brown pun at cat. James Brown was a cat. Sorry.
We'll edit one in later.
Tabby. Brown tabby.
Oh,
could be something then.
Tenuous. No, I agree.
I've gone off track now. I think I was trying to bring it back to cats.
Oh, right, yeah.
We were talking about cats.
It's a great book. It's a really good book about cats, and I read it. I had a kind of cat theme on my flight, because I'd read this one on the way out, and then I read another one on the way back called What If All Cats Disappeared?
So I was going to say that I noticed that in the bookshop. In fact, I bought it for someone for Christmas, but I've not read it. But that was another Japanese novel about that has cat in the title.
Yeah, So I read that one and that one. And this one, which I'm just getting the right name for, if I can. There we go. If Cats Disappeared from the World by Genki Kawamura, which was a crazy book.
Mm-hmm.
It was basically a guy who had to make a deal with the devil, and every day he's like, right, that's fine. He was terminally ill, and he could have one more day on earth if he made something disappear.
Mm.
Chocolate, films, music, cats. And it's a really clever book about his decision process with this. It's brilliant.
That sounds cool.
That does,
so two wonderful cat-themed books there.
Perfect.
We are on fire.
Right, will we pause for a poem now?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
cat pause.
Yeah, no. I'm
a bit behind there.
Yeah.
Well,
It was good. I liked it. This is Sarah Grant and Stitches.
My mother is not a tall person. I've long since dwarfed her, but she still bends her knees to hug me, stooping for the child I was, arms reaching for the days that she could wrap my whole body and all my worries against her chest with laced fingers. She can't quite lace her fingers anymore, but she still bends her knees. I guess some habits are hard to break. It's hard to argue with muscle memory. No, my mother never did raise a dangerous woman. She tells me, don't push your luck. Fairy tale hands on Atlas hips, leaning over me with that stare. You know, the secret handshake that everyone in the mother club knows. Her library-chested child always on the brink of another story. She sews me dresses, and I watch the repetitive arc of her fingers as she pulls together scraps of colour to make something beautiful for me to wear. Reminds me to shine brightly. I know that she would have sewn me armour if she thought I had needed it. I see her stitches in everything around me. They're there in the father that's teaching his daughters how to fight. There in the desperately sought and deserved education. There in her heel prints on the path to success and his relieved smile through his desperate tears. And I wonder if I'll ever stitch a story with so much love. When I try to talk about world issues, the words just die on my tongue. I try to bring to life stories of our strife, but I can't help but wonder, why me? This library-chested child, shushed from around the social barriers by serious men in serious suits holding history in their hands and telling me that now is not the time to read out loud. But why not me? When I have thoughts on gender equality and all the ways that I own my own body, and if I had a 1 in 2 chance of being born a girl, is that still a 1 in 7 billion to change this world? I'm so grateful for being this lucky and free, but I still have a desperate need to tell our story. I don't know what I can put into this life, but I can't keep quiet anymore. My mother says don't chance your luck, so I'll slip my Atlas hands into her fairy tale ones and take my turn at spinning. Add threads to the pattern, make it stronger, and add more colours and bolder and louder. It's not luck, it's a chance to change. All I can put into the world is me, my story, my line in the tail, thread in the pattern, body in the storm, because I was born. Out of all the people in all the times in all the universe, I am here now speaking, and I am not alone. From umbilical cord to the bonds of sisterhood, we are all held together by stitches. The repetitive arc of millions of hands pulling together something beautiful. We are fragile on our own, but together we can be called nothing but dangerous. Fathers for their daughters, sons for their mothers, women for women, he for she. I slip my hands into hers and we stand. Her fingers can't lace anymore, but she grips my knuckles like the bars of a roller coaster, and we both wait for the free fall. Heads up, standing tall, adding our voices to all. We know some habits are hard to break. It's hard to argue with muscle memory, but we hope one day, maybe, I won't have to raise a dangerous woman. I'll hand her the dresses that my mother made and say, "Don't be afraid to tear these apart. Our thread is strong and I know how to sew. It can be made up entirely anew to fit you in a world that's much more you."
Natalie, what have you been reading?
So I kind of revisited something that I pick up now and then just because of the format of it.
Mm.
So it's basically love letters between Henry Miller and Anise Nin. Don't know if you're like familiar with them.
No.
So Anise is like a French author, and she did a lot of stuff with like femininity and sexuality and all that. And then Henry Miller is kind of like the same. I don't know as much about him as I do about Anise, but basically the two of them were having an affair. Scandal. I know. And also Henry's wife June was involved. So right. It was this sort of weird love triangle. But basically this is like a collection of letters just between Henry and Anise, and it's just like so nicely written because they're both like writers. They both really like support each other's dreams. Mm. Like it's like romantic without being like cheesy.
Yeah,
like it's just a nice like escapism, and just like the way they articulate their feelings for each other. And I don't know, I just like when I'm in that kind of mood, I'm just like, this is great. So I just have a wee extract from it that I really like.
Yeah,
so this is Henry, and he says, "Anise, I don't know how to tell you what I feel. I live in perpetual expectancy. You come and the time slips away in a dream. It is only when you go that I realise completely your presence, and then it is too late. You numb me."
Oh, Oh, fucking writers, eh?
Yeah.
Know how to set the heart to flutter.
Oh yeah,
like, I sound like I'm being facetious. That is actually really nice. I'm not
kind of team was this set?
Well, I think it's in the 40s, but I might be incorrect. Oh, you've asked me. I'm going to need to Google this.
Okay,
that's fine. We'll get
there with that.
Yeah.
Do you ever write? Have you ever wrote love letters around the table, just asking in general?
I've written love emails before.
Yes, I've done that.
Which I think are quite nice because you can, I don't know, they're out there now. And like, if you ever wanted to look back, I've like tried to read back a couple of them, but they're so boring. But
yeah.
Like, not in like a bad way, just in like, cause it's, you're, obviously it's with someone who's like either like far away that you can't contact them for whatever reason. So you're just trying to write them like every day or every couple of days, just like keep in touch. But it's like a nicer way than like texting or whatever, because you can like
actually spend like effort.
Exactly. Yeah. So it is nice, but it's also when you read them back, you're just like, my fucking life is boring as shit. Like,
can you give us like, some examples of content?
Well, I don't know. Just like because you're just talking about what's happening in your day to day, and they're talking about what they're doing, and it's really interesting and nice at the time because you're fucking obviously in love, and you just want to like hear about them, and you're interested in everything they're doing. But when you listen back to it like a year later or whatever, you're like,
oh my god,
you're like, wow, like, yeah, that's it's, but it's. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't know. I imagine if you like read your like grandparents' like love letters, like when they were like whatever from years and years ago, they would be boring as shit as well, because it's not.
I think that's what's nice about them.
You're not like, it's not like a big deal. You're not writing for like a specific reason. You're just like writing to catch up, writing to keep in chat. It's like mundane everyday chat that you can't have because
you're not together.
Exactly.
And it's what's interesting, I think, I guess, about reading like collected love letters of two people who you don't know, is that it does give you an insight into their life in like a slightly different way than if someone was writing something about themselves, saying this is my life and this is they present themselves in a way that they wish to be seen, where in, as opposed to that thing where the mundane is kind of what's important. And so all of the things that, all the details you do get about these people's lives and their feelings of what they care about is kind of just really honest and genuine. And it's a way to kind of get an insight into these lives of people that you don't know. Whereas you don't need that kind of insight about yourself, because you're like, well, yeah, I remember, right? Yeah, I lived through that. I don't necessarily, it's not that interesting going back and discovering.
I can't remember which singer it is, but he's talking about writing lyrics, and he was like, the mundane, boring, it's Jarvis Cocker. He was like, when you write your lyrics, you should write stuff about the stuff that you find fucking so ordinary and like everyday and mundane, because for you, the ordinary and mundane will be like incredible to someone else listening to it, that's like a different life. And so like hearing about everybody's like boring everyday things from like a certain perspective can be really interesting and like illuminating for like whatever that you're writing, song or a poem or a thing.
Good
or
tip.
Whatever. Yeah, Jarvis Cocker.
When me and my wife were getting together,
here we go.
When we were courting, she had a boyfriend, right?
Oh,
I know, unbelievable. I was at work and she was a student, right? 2 year difference before you start thinking, like Novikov style. But we emailed back and forward and we played 5 questions. So you're allowed to play, ask 5 questions. You answered the 5 questions and asked another 5 questions.
Oh yeah, right.
So we did that for seriously 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
And on our first year of wedding anniversary, Anna had printed them all and made them into a wee book.
That's so nice.
And see the amount of fucking lies we took, you know what I mean, to try and make ourselves to make ourselves more interesting. It's actually so interesting, like. And you're like, oh my god, you
like, what kind of things did you lie about?
I don't know, maybe like films you liked, or you know, just you know, experiences you've had, just to make you sound that little bit cooler.
Edgy.
Well, yeah, I've read Post Office. Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Aye, all that kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah. Excellent.
But it's quite funny.
No, that's brilliant.
Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely love letters then, yeah.
Yeah, love letters in a different way. And we got married.
There you go.
I guess you're allowed to cheat if you get married afterwards.
See, that's the thing. Because the guy that she cheated on, God, she's such an idiot, right? Because the guy went off to be a scientist in CERN. And like in Geneva, and I'm sure is like fucking loaded, you know what I mean? And she's stuck with me, aww, you know what I mean?
That's adorable.
What about you, Natalie?
Yeah, I'm a big cheesy mess sometimes. I've done the full mark.
Good on you. Really,
so
good.
Okay.
All right.
That's enough.
Excellent. Cheers, Natalie. Thank you. So,
but are you loving the book?
Oh yeah. I always love
forgot
it.
Forgot about that.
Yeah, no, it's great, and it's just nice reading something that's a wee bit less, feels like less of a slog, because you can just like pick it up, read a couple, go back to your daily life.
Yeah,
very good,
lovely. Okay, brilliant. Well, let's have our second poem, which is going to be. Let me get my piece of paper. It's going to be Tomona Satole, and this is My Story.
My story. Over here, over here. Over there, over there. Clues to the past lie undetected by a naked mask that has not worn the face of integrity. Over here, over here. Over there, over there. Clues to the future lie unexposed to the naked eye that has not worn the rag of adversity, not for to drape, to wrap round oneself warmly, only, if only, if only, to watch it unfold, countless encounters unfolding, experiencing experience unfolding, some not getting the point of my story. Maybe I'm not telling it the way they expected to hear it. Just broken language of broken ties, known as otherwise and otherwise unknown. In other glories, other stories. But this, over here, over here. Over there. In places ancient, my stories bear truth, the endurance of life. My story walks barefoot, the persistence of time. The persistence of time. Bare foot, stripped of the covering, then covered in instructions. This way to walk, that way to stray. Bare spirit, stripped of the covering, then covered in instructions. This way to feel, that way inferior. Outside and on the interior. Turmoil, my turmoil. Turmoil, being of the soil. Being a reluctant byproduct of what seems to have become, and only now, just starting to understand why. Being a misfit of sorts, though typical of this generation, and only now, just starting to understand why. Still hurting from the way we were poisoned. Still recovering from the day we were poisoned, but still loving loved ones. Over here, over here, over there. Over there, endeavors of my search, the hope for a captive who doesn't want to know about freedom. The thought is too daunting, captivity is much too secure, activity much too obscure. So, if it was spoken, it was spoken, being spoken, word, meaning seeming unseen in the sharp end of experience, cuts without shedding blood. So, there is no trail. Following this tale, just a tale, following this trail of bare truth, the endurance of life, walking barefoot, the persistence of time, the persistence of time. Over here, over here, over there, over there. Hekan.
Speculative Books is a publishing company based in Scotland. We publish a new book every month. Subscribe today from £6.99 and have a book of poetry sent direct to your door every month with free UK postage and packaging. Pulling from a wide range of forms and styles, the Speculative subscription is an essential purchase for any poetry lover. Find out more at www.speculativebooks.net.
Leo?
Yes, Dale.
What have you been reading?
I've been reading a book which I've got, I'm reaching for because I want to get the title of it right. It's called A Girl is a Half-Formed Thing by Emma McBride.
Yes.
I was doing some research on how to properly pronounce the first name earlier because it's not one I'm familiar with, but Emma McBride. And it's her first novel. And it is, it's a book basically from the first person about a girl's life from pretty much the point when she's born up until her kind of mid to late 20s, when the story ends. But it's so fascinating because it's written as, the whole thing is just written as memories of things happening and what everyone is saying at different points in her life. But it's written almost to kind of resemble the way that your memories are. So the further back you go, so the first like chapter of the book is what she remembers as a baby. So it's just like sounds and just fragments of words and just like flashes of images. And it's, there's next to no punctuation in the whole book. There's not really much in the way of paragraph spacing. There's no quotation marks. It's just like kind of, it's just text just constantly because of the way, there is punctuation, but it's used for emphasis rather than for where it would normally be grammatically. And so like her memories when she, I might read a tiny little bit of it just to kind of show what I mean. It should, it's Irish and it's an Irish story about Irish people, and I think it would make sense to be done in an Irish accent, but obviously I'm not going to do that and none of us here have an Irish accent.
Try.
No, because it's really good and I want to try and do it some kind of justice. But just as like a little thing, the first paragraph says, for you, you'll soon, you'll give her name. In the stitches of her skin, she'll wear you, say, mammy, me, yes, you, bounce the bed, I'd say that's what you did, then lay you down. They cut you round, wait an hour and day. And it's like, it's just like that all the way through.
Trapping
it's just,
out.
Yeah.
What
and
the actual,
but
lovely.
And it's like that for the first, like, maybe three chapters. It's just this kind of solid wall of just like really beautiful and weird, evocative text. And then ever so gradually, as she gets older, the sentences start to make more and more sense and the memories become more and more complete. And it never, the book never tells you that's what's happening as she's growing up, but you just kind of, I remember it, that there's that kind of light bulb moment of kind of being like, oh fuck, this is what's I understand what's happening, when I realized that it's getting clearer and clearer, the more clearly the character can remember things as it goes. And it's brilliant and it's really, really brutal. It is, people who know me know that I have a heart made of stone and I have never shown any emotion, but I cried at that book a lot. Because it's just really, really, really something.
That's cool. See, I find it hard enough to like read and understand a book that's written in a normal format, so I feel like I would really struggle with this. But it sounds interesting. It sounds like it's something you have to be constantly engaged with.
I did read it fairly quickly, I think. I probably read it, it probably took me about, well, quickly by my standards, I probably read it in about 2 weeks, which for me is quite quick to read a book, because you did find, it's like, I got really invested in it and I wanted to keep reading it, but also it's actually quite hard work to read, so I did have to keep taking breaks, because otherwise you just kind of stop taking it in.
It is really nice though when you're like reading a book that's quite complicated for some reason, like when the first time you read like Trainspotting or like A Clockwork Orange, which has loads of like weird slang or like some way that you might have to keep stopping and like checking, or like I had a version of Clockwork Orange that had like a glossary at the back, so you could like check what the words meant. And but after like four or five chapters you don't need it anymore and you're just like in the zone, and then new words come up that you didn't know the meaning of, but you can like figure out by the context because you're so like invested in it.
Yeah.
When you get that moment when it just clicks, then all of a sudden you can't put it down and you're like
That's
in the world.
Good on the publishers for taking a I suppose, would you call that a gamble? It's her first novel, and it's written in this weird...
Yeah, like, I don't know if it's...
Fever and Fever.
So it won the...
Oh, our pal was at Fever
and
Fever.
Fever, yeah. It won the Bailey's Women's Prize for Fiction. Fever. It was shortlisted for the Authors Club Best First Novel. It's won a shit ton of prizes. It did really, really well.
Yeah, but that initial brief must
But
be,
to actually have it published... No, it's nice. It's
very
really
clever.
Nice to see that happen. Yeah.
I find the whole... chat about memory interesting. I find that like interesting as a subject. My friend did this like art installation project on memory. As wanky as that sounds, it really wasn't.
It's the right crowd to talk about.
But like, I didn't realise, and this might not be brand new information, it may well be, but like when you remember a memory, you're never actually remembering the original memory, you're remembering the last time your brain's processed the memory.
I love that chat.
Which is why you like grow and develop and get over certain things and things seem more far away.
I don't think
it's gotten very existential.
That's very cool. I like that a lot.
You're remembering the last time you remembered the memory.
Yeah.
So the things you think are your best memories are actually the least accurate, because every time you remember it,
your brain's rewriting it essentially with a new perspective or a new...
Exactly, and kind of new knowledge. And
is that why, you know, when you think about, say, past people you've been with or something like that, and you can paint this amazing picture of them even though they were a complete fuck to you for that whole time,
or vice versa?
Or the opposite.
Interesting, right?
That is really cool. And finding new ways to explore memory is really interesting, because it is such a powerful input. Like, it's a big part of how you understand the world, is what you remember about it. So to making that kind of the kind of form of the book. And what's interesting about it, about this book, is that it doesn't really make a point of that. It doesn't kind of go like, oh, look at me talking about... It never really makes reference to that, the fact that that's what's happening, because it's all told in the present tense. It's just that it just explores that in such a fascinating way, that how even with these really fragmented images and words that don't actually make any kind of sense, it still paints a picture. Like, you can, even in the beginning of the book where it's basically gibberish, I at least had a really clear image of everything that was going on in my mind, just because of how well it was, how kind of evocative I really would recommend it. It's very good. You can get it on Audible, I was going to say, or other audiobook providers. It's probably just Audible, actually. But
well, Google have started doing it.
Oh, have they?
On like Play Store.
But yeah, you can. There is definitely an audiobook of it. I know.
I'd be interested just to like listen to that and see how...
I don't know what it sounds
done,
like. Yeah. I don't know what it would be like to listen to it. I don't know if it would be better or harder to
follow.
Harder to follow. But yeah, I strongly recommend it. I don't have a lot of chat about it, really. It's just a really
great
book.
No, I think you've convinced me.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I'm up for it.
Anyone can borrow my copy after I'm finished reading it.
Perfect.
Will do.
Yeah. Pass it around. We'll have a whole book club just about this one book.
I think that'd be a good book club.
Oh,
so like you bring everybody reads a book, and then you swap the books.
I think that's a cool idea.
And then
idea,
you come
yeah.
back again, you swap the books again. So like,
cool.
Yeah, however many people were in it, you could come for your first week, and it would be the same. Even if you'd been there for 6 weeks in a row, it wouldn't matter, because... Or you could go away and not come for 3 months and then come back again and be like, right, finally finish this, and then you can just chat about it or whatever.
That's kind of, I think traditionally that's sort of what book clubs are like, isn't it? That everyone's read this at the same book and you all kind of discuss it. I like this format that we've got.
Yeah.
Not shitting on it. I think it's cool.
That was actually C. Smith's book format. She started a book club. There was that format, and we had one, maybe two meetings, and then never did it again. Yeah. But it was her idea. I thought it was an excellent format.
It is a very good format.
I'm a big fan of formats.
Yes.
In general.
Yep.
Cool. Let's have a poem.
Yeah.
We're going to have a short story for this poem slot. This is Chris McQueer with Korma Police.
Korma Police. Paul was choking for one last hit. He'd nearly been caught so many times before that he'd had to come off them completely. His hand shaking, he picked up the phone. His daughter Haley knew exactly what he was doing. "Da," she begged, tears welling up in her eyes. "No again, please. You said you were after them." "I know, hen. I'm sorry," he replied, putting an arm around her. Just one last time, then that'll be me. Nae mair commas after this, I promise. Paul dialed the number for the Spice of Life Indian Takeaway, the only place still willing to sell commas to desperate punters. Can I have a home delivery, please? Paul said flatly. Thompson, 14 Kilnside Road, Vindaloo, extra hot, boiled rice and a plain naan. Aye, I'm sure. It'll be alright. I know. I didn't get it for yous if anybody asks. Right, cheers. An extra hot vindaloo with boiled rice and a plain naan was the code name for a chicken korma. You couldn't even say the word korma these days. It was dirty, taboo. It started off with people just being laughed at, but soon escalated into something more serious. Korma lovers were ostracised, bullied for their love of the creamy curry. Then they became illegal. People were imprisoned under the so-called Spice Act 2018. Bootleg korma started doing the rounds, passed about in secret between those who enjoyed the milder things in life. About half an hour later, there was a chap at the door. Paul got up and looked through the spy hole. A tiny, frail-looking Indian man in a baseball cap shuffled nervously on the doorstep. Paul opened the door slightly. That's £20, please, sir, the man said. What? It was only a tenner last month, Paul said indignantly. Well, this is risky business, my friend. We need to make it worth our while. Paul passed a £20 note to the man. The man looked at the money in his hand as if Paul had just deposited a humongous shite into his palm. Sorry, Paul shrugged. I've no change for a tip. The man handed Paul the blue poly bag and shook his head at Paul. Cheeky bastard, Paul muttered as he closed the door. Back in his car, the delivery driver dialed a number into his phone and held it to his ear. Yes, hello, I'd like to report a suspected korma eater, please. 14 Kilnside Road. Bye. He hung up and drove off. Paul poured the pale gold sauce onto the bed of rice. Steam wafted up into his nose. Oh, fucking yes, he said. Haley sat on the couch, biting her nails as she watched them. Paul could feel himself salivating as he raised that first forkful to his gaping mouth. Bang, bang, bang! Three loud chaps at the door. Paul dropped his fork. Him and Haley looked at each other. Korma police, open this door! Shit, Paul said to Haley. Right, you open the door then and I'll get rid of this. But before either of them had lifted their arses from their respective seats, the front door flew off its hinges and a team of police had their guns trained on Haley and Paul. Don't move, said one of the korma police, raising the visor in his helmet. Paul looked at Haley and then to the policeman in front of him, then down at his curry. Paul's eyes darted back to the policeman as he advanced on him, gun poised, ready to fire. Step away from the foul substance, the korma police said. Paul looked down at his korma. It is not a foul substance, he sobbed. It's the most delicious, perfect thing in the world. Just try it and you'll see. You'll all see. I will not be polluting my body with that filth, barked the policeman, firing around into Paul's plate. Korma sauce splattered everywhere. Paul licked some from his hands and through the corners of his mouth. Is your sense of masculinity so fragile that you'd sit and burn the mouth off yourself with a vindaloo to prove you're some kind of hard man, rather than enjoy this delicious taste sensation? He asked. The korma police all looked at each other. The leader nodded and advanced on Paul once again. Paul picked up his fork to defend himself. The leader halted. Paul scraped some korma sauce up off the carpet with the fork. Sir, put down the fork, the leader said, raising his gun to Paul. Paul just smiled at him. He raised the fork to his mouth, keeping eye contact with the leader of the korma police the whole time. Sir, if you do not put down the fork, we will be well within our rights to use lethal force against you. Paul's tongue had barely made contact with the sauce when a bullet flew into his forehead, killing him instantly. Haley wailed in anguish. That's my da! You've shot my da! Two of the comma police ushered her away from the scene. "Cover up that cunt's face," the leader said with disdain to one of his subordinates. "I can't even look at him anymore." "Yes, sir," a young officer said, and he covered up Paul's face with the now cold naan bread.
I love that story.
That's a good story, right?
Sam, what have you been reading?
So I felt kind of bad last month when I said that The Bell Jar was just about Sylvia Plath going bonkers and then didn't really like elaborate on it much. And I was like thinking about that a lot. And I remember being like to you after the podcast being like, just be really harsh with the editing, be really harsh. And I was like, why did I say that? And I was like, it was because I was like, I didn't like my bad analysis of the book.
Right.
So it's because I just started it and I hadn't remembered as much as I thought I would remember. So I finished The Bell Jar.
Okay.
Great. Loved it. Super good. I wish I'd prepared more notes now, actually. I just wanted to say, it goes through all the parts that we chatted about last time, like her when she's in New York. And then what I wanted to actually ask you, Natalie, was the character Buddy, is that Ted Hughes?
People say that it is, I think.
Yeah.
But I don't actually know.
Oh, right. Well, neither do I. So that's good. Because I remember...
It's maybe speculated.
Yeah, we mentioned that something in passing like last time and I was like, oh, and then as I was reading it, I was like, oh, maybe it is. But he doesn't seem like that bad a guy in the book, the Buddy. Like,
yeah.
He's just a bit like old-fashioned and like dumb, like, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Like, but yeah, no, Sylvia Plath goes through all the like electroshock therapy like in the book. It's like I don't know, that's only like a really small part like in the second half of it, but it like all kind of leads up to that.
Yeah.
And like it starts off with her coming back home and just talking about all these like different ways that she's like gonna kill herself, and then goes like meets her pals on the beach, or not her pals, like her parents, like her mum puts her in like a kind of forced like outing with her like friends, and is like, yeah, you have to go, and then she like swims out as far as she can, but then can't swim any further, and she's like, I'm just gonna keep swimming, but then like it's like, oh, I can't do it for whatever reason, swims back, then she's like has like a razor, she's like in the bathroom, but like her mum comes home and she's like, oh, I couldn't do it that time, and then she tries to like strangle herself, but she's like, you can't physically strangle yourself without your body like stopping you, so she stops again, and it goes on and goes on and goes on and goes on until she gets put into like a psychiatric ward, and then it's all just about her first being in like a kind of state-run psychiatric ward, which is like really, I don't know, pretty grim, and like the electroshock therapy she gets is really like horrific and like a horrible read. And then after that, her mum like puts her into like a nice like private hospital where everything's like lovely, and she has like a nice like woman doctor, and the whole time in the book she's saying like, I can't touch type, and I don't want to be a waitress, and I don't know what to do. And then when she can't read anymore and she gets dead depressed, she's like, oh, all I can do is like kill myself because I don't have any other option if I can't read and I can't write. But she's like, the whole time she's like, oh, well, I can't type, so I can't be a typist, and I can't be a waitress because I don't want to be a waitress. And they're like, seem like she keeps coming back to these like options over and over again, and she's like, I don't know what to do with my life. And then she gets to the posh psychiatric ward, and her psychiatrist is a woman, and she's like, I didn't realize like women could be psychiatrists. And then it's this nice little like light bulb moment where you can tell she's, yeah, I don't know what I'm trying to say, but it's like she, like the part of the reason that she's depressed is because she doesn't know what to do with her life.
Yeah.
But part of the reason that she doesn't know what to do with her life is because like society hasn't given her like any options. Yeah. You know what I mean? And it's not until she sees like a woman as a psychiatrist that she's like, shit, that's actually something I could do, even though she's been like around loads of successful women and loads of like doctors and nurses like the whole time. It's not until she like clicks and that happens, and then she kind of goes and she starts getting better, and then she even gets electroshock therapy in the posh like hospital, but that's like much nicer, and it's kind of like going to sleep almost, and it's like done properly, and apparently electroshock therapy is really good for depression. It like works in like 50% of cases. But,
really?
Yeah.
So what, they just shock the body?
No, it's like...
Oh, it's in the head, isn't it?
It's in the head, but it's like, it's meant to be just like going to sleep.
Uh-huh.
So like in the 40s and 50s, they didn't give you like a like muscle relaxant or anything.
Right.
Because they'd be like, oh, it's just like knocking you out, so there's no point. But like you used to get like convulsions like so bad that it would like give you like dislocated joints or like fractured bones and stuff.
Jeez.
But yeah, uh-huh. But... like now it's like it's just like kind of like going to sleep almost, and you wake up like relax and chill. And that's where the bell jar comes from, because she's talking about being depressed and going around as if she's like trapped underneath this bell jar the whole time and the whole world's, and she's like breathing in. I think like she's talking about her own like sour air.
And she's like,
I'm just stuck in this bell jar, like breathing in my own sour air. And then after she has the posh electroshock therapy, she's like, I felt like it was like lifted a bit. And all of a sudden there was like kind of like a freshness back to my life, and she slowly starts to get better. And I've still not read the last chapter, so it could all go horribly wrong. But I'm nearly there.
Cool.
Totally. So that's what I read. And next week, I'm going to read, not next week, next session.
Next time.
I got given the Stephen Hawking's The Brief Answers to the Big Questions.
Cool.
So I'll be able to tell you, is there a God? How did it all begin? Can we predict the future? What's inside a black hole? Are there other intelligent life in... Are there other intelligent...
Not in this room.
Our intelligent exist universe? Question mark. Will artificial intelligence outsmart us? How do we shape our future? Will we survive on Earth? Should we colonize space? Is time travel possible?
Ooh.
I can't wait to find out.
Yeah, I heard that Stephen Hawking was told that every equation that he put in one of his books would half the number of readers. Yeah, and this one doesn't have any equations in it,
really.
So, and it was his last book they wrote before he died. It's actually like, I've read like the first couple of pages, and it's written in like a really nice style. It's really easy to read. I think it's like, it's for people who don't know anything about anything.
Science.
I like that. Perfect. I like nice, accessible science books.
Totally. Yeah, me too.
So I'm looking forward to that one as well.
That's perfect. Cool. I was reading a thing. I'm a total like dunce when it comes to poetry in a kind of academic, like I don't know a lot of stuff about poetry.
Me too.
So like I know that's like how important Sylvia Plath is, but I actually have read very little of Sylvia Plath's work, and I haven't read The Bell Jar, even though I feel like I've known about it for almost as long as I've been alive, but I've just never actually gotten around to reading it. But maybe I should one day.
Sylvia Plath was such like a literary like person. Like she was like from like very like young age, she was like around like academics, and her like mother taught in a university, and she was like always published, and her like parents like encouraged her to like publish her poems. So she was always like winning scholarships and going to things and like studying and like getting like into universities, and went to Oxford and blah blah, blah, and studied like Dylan Thomas, and like had all these like things on like the quote unquote like greats of poetry. So like I think her first book is really formulaic, but like it's quite rigid and like structured. And then her second book, Ariel, which was published after her death, like near around about the time when The Bell Jar was published, is like she uses like the start of those conventions and then kind of just goes off on one a bit, and like it's like, which is why it's seen as like so like revolutionary and fucking free form, like modern fucking beat poets or whatever.
Very cool.
But yeah, but no, I don't know. I nearly bought a book that was like how to like literary criticize poetry, and like, I was like, I'll just fucking learn it myself. Fuck last week.
I know what I like.
But then I was like, yeah, I'd take an awful lot of time and effort.
Yeah.
So, do you know?
Well, it's just, I was having a conversation with someone on a train a while ago, and we were talking about poetry, and they were talking about how they were, like, experimenting with different forms, and they were like, oh, yeah, I mean, my friend, like, made this challenge where we were going to, like, write sonnets, and, like, that was really fun. And, like, that Stephen Ferguson, who I haven't seen around for a while, but he was quite big on the Glasgow scene for a while, would just show up to poetry nights and just do sonnets all the time.
Totally.
And he would win slams and stuff with it. And I was, I don't know what a fucking sonnet is. Like, I know
it's 12 lines.
Is it 14 lines 14? Or something?
Right. Made an arse of myself here, haven't I?
A, B, A, B, C, C, D, D, E, F, F, E, G, G.
There you go.
That could be completely wrong.
No, that sounds cool. I'm convinced.
Yeah, something like that. That's like the, it's some kind of rhyming scheme like that.
That's why you're the head of poetry.
Thanks. But no, I tried to write a bunch. I was really bad at them. It's like, I think you have to write so many that you can start to write, feel natural.
Start to think that way.
Yeah. I guess it's just that thing with poetry that, like, it's so, people's understanding of what it is can be so wide. This is a whole other conversation, but like, we all are involved in the poetry scene, but like, and have been at various times referred to as poets and still are. But like, I've been referred to as a poet, but like, on a technical level, I do not know the first thing about writing poetry.
Yeah, but it's still a poem.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of what I mean. Like, there's poetry, there's poems, and then there's poems. Mm-hmm. And I find that, I can't remember why I started talking about this. I might cut it out, but it felt like something that was worth saying.
No, definitely. I think we should just learn what makes, like, because I've definitely thought that myself, and being like, when someone stands up at like one of like Colin Herd's nights in the poetry club that are like all attended by like Glasgow Uni like lecturers, and like all the clientele or the punters are like completely different to like Indeed or St. Louis or something like that.
Yeah.
And everybody listens kind of quietly and goes, it makes those kind of noises, which is completely different to like the kind of performance poetry side of things. And I'm like, I wish I fucking knew what it was.
Do you think everyone's just pretending?
Well, I don't know, because I think a lot of the time it'll be a lecturer that's teaching a class on poetry that'll then get booked to come and do a poetry reading, and they'll read their own poetry, or they'll read excerpts from other poetry, or they'll have someone that they'll book in, or someone they've been studying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So, like, or I think sometimes they take a poem that's quite complex, and then they write their own versions of it and write riffs on it and go around and do lots of, like, I don't know. I'd like to have a master's in poetry. I'll get a master's in poetry, and then I'll come back and let you all know.
We'll talk about this again.
Excellent.
All right. Good. Yeah.
Totally. Lorna Callery's got a master's in poetry. Let's just fucking
ask her. I'll just ask her. I'll just talk to her about it.
Totally. Yeah.
Sorted.
It's interesting though, because I was talking same kind of conversation with Christina Neuwert, who's one of our authors. She's doing a literary doctor's at the moment. She's doing like a proper thing, and she's been through the whole a proper thing, a doctorate is what she's doing.
Yeah, right? Learning big words constant.
Aye, she's always learning stuff, man. But she's been through the creative writing mill, know what I mean? Yeah, I brought up the point to her that whenever, fucking hell now, I sound really thick, but it's like, whenever we get submissions in, right?
Yeah.
Particularly from, I don't want to typecast, but particularly from older dudes.
Yeah.
Who are like, hey man, I'm 39 and I've just started my degree in creative writing. I'm like, holy fuck, how could you be bothered at that age to then, you know, start that?
Oh, don't be down.
No, like, I'm not down on it. No, I admire them for it. Like, wow, like, how could you be fucked doing it?
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying. Like,
your skill.
Yeah, but.
Yeah. Chasing dreams, man. They're chasing their dreams.
Yeah, but why not just write? What's my point? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And her point was that, it works out really well for some people, but what she thinks they're actually doing is just really dedicating themselves to it. So just saying, this year I'm going to learn creative writing and I'm going to write like fuck. So you could do that by going to uni or not. You know what I mean? As long as you dedicate the time to it, it's just the way they're dedicating their time, I suppose.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to have like a routine and be disciplined and stuff like that. Uni's definitely good.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you feel like you have routines and are disciplined when you want to write?
I go through so many phases. Like my best phase was like for almost, I would say almost a year. I got up and wrote for 2 hours every day, and it was fucking brilliant.
That's
honest
good.
To God.
Just anything.
But I don't know if the writing was that great. That's the thing. But I learned a lot, obviously, from doing it so much. Yeah. But right now, I don't feel so structured because we're so busy with the publishing stuff. But when I do get the time to write, I feel like it's far more concentrated and a lot better. But I fucking hate how little I write.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are you quite structured in the way that you write, or does it just happen when it happens?
It's just like if I've been thinking about something, to be honest. Like I sometimes I'm like, I wish I could do like, you know, like writing challenges that some people do. I think I would like to do something like that and actually force myself to do it more.
Yeah.
because I can't just be like, oh, if it happens, it happens. I mean, nobody's gonna
publish
a book doing that.
There's nothing worse than that. Like the fucking, I'm gonna get this book published. Oh, cool. Have you sent it to anyone? No, you know, like it's never gonna happen for you. You definitely have to do it yourself.
Okay, there.
You gotta get
what
it.
What about
out
you, Sam? Because you've been reading lots of self help.
Yeah. So right now I'm in day 5 of a 300 day writing challenge.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Uh huh. So pretty ambitious.
It's good. Shoot for the moon.
Well, that's, I don't know, like the last time I was like quite productive with my writing was when I did that and just made myself write every day. So I've been doing it for maybe like just over a week and I've missed like 3 days or something. But I'm trying not to have, that's another self-help type thing. It's like you don't have like black and white thinking.
Mm.
Like
yeah.
If you miss a couple of days, doesn't matter. Just get back to it the next day you can.
Yeah.
So I'm on day 5.
What kind of tasks is it?
It's not like that. What I'm just doing is trying to write like a full page of A4 with no line breaks in it on the computer.
Pure point size 72.
But just write it without stopping, without thinking.
Mm.
So and I try and do it in the morning. So you'll just, it's almost like a bit like a diary as well if you want it to be, or you can make it more creative. But I just try, once you start typing, you just don't stop until you've got like a full page of A4, just to kind of get it all out and get you like in the mood. And then if you want to write a poem, you can. And if you don't, doesn't matter. You've written a page of shite, and then you just do it every day. The idea being, at the end of 300 days, I'll have 300 pages of nonsense, but hopefully some poems in there.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Oh, that sounds really interesting.
No, genuine. I think I need to do something like that.
National Novel Writing Month's fucking great.
I see.
If it works, if you've got, it's your own fault if you don't do it, because you need to think before you start. You need to have the book idea.
Yeah.
The worst thing in the world is sitting down on day one of the 30-day month, going, "What the fuck am I going to write?"
Yeah.
Aye.
It's November,
have you been there?
It
sounds like you've been there.
I've done it a couple of times, and I've got one good one and one shit one, mm-hmm. I would say. And the shit one was I had a kind of half-baked idea
mm-hmm.
where I knew the end, and that was it. So I just started to get to that end point and to get
right.
the word count, whereas the second one, which I feel was a lot better, I had a better idea of what I wanted to do, and I also, which isn't the point, but I flung the kind of word count out the window and just said, right, just do it every day
mm-hmm.
for X amount of time. And if you end up with 50,000 words, you end up with 50. If you end up with 30, you end up with 30.
Yeah.
Because the word count thing was fucking stressful.
I think if I was going to do it, I'd definitely have to start with like a chapter plan.
Mm.
Like I'd have to have a story in my head and I'd have to be like, this is what's happening in these, and this is how many chapters is going to be.
I'm not into that, but you are into that. Sam's room looks like fucking Psycho.
My brother,
you know, killer stuff.
I fucking do like
stuff.
A bit of string and a pen.
You're all about that. I like start, middle, and end, and that's it.
My brother, who is a children's book illustrator and author, when he was writing his first book that he'd written himself, he was struggling with it, and he went to see my dad, and my dad built him a database of the plot of his book.
Okay.
So it was just like a kind of like a, it just had like all of the like major plot points, all of the kind of like tracked what happened to all of the characters and like where things would happen in
Holy
the story
shit, yeah.
and like sorted it into what chapter is gonna, and it, so it's like the whole book
yeah.
was just kind of written out in this database, and then he could just go in, and then he, I think there was more to it than that,
uh-huh.
but he at one point had his in, like the entire plan for the book written into this database that he could then just like access to write it.
Page 4,
that,
what do I write?
Yeah, and I thought, that's quite, I'm quite into that. Like I've realized
organized.
That when I've, because about the round about the 12th, 13th of November every year, I suddenly remember it's supposed to be National Novel Writing Month. So I've never actually done it.
Yeah,
should we do it this year?
I'd like to do it this
let's
year.
Fucking do it.
Let's do it. All of
try
us.
Do it.
Okay, I'll try.
Yeah. but yeah, I'm gonna, because I've got a couple that I'm thinking about. But what I want to do, I think the only way it's ever possibly going to work is build. I've been building spreadsheets all week at work, and I'm getting quite into it, like pivot tables and shit.
Whoa.
Oh,
yes. So I'm gonna do that for a book, and then maybe that could be the. That'd be quite.
Write a book about how to use spreadsheets.
Yeah, or write a book that's actually in a spreadsheet and like
My fucking god,
or write a story in the format of an Excel spreadsheet,
a novel, yeah, but in the format of an Excel spreadsheet. Yeah,
wow.
I need to do that before someone steals that amazing idea. Yeah.
Can't believe no one's done it already.
Honestly, shocker.
Off topic, but do you follow the Extraordinary Routines page on Instagram?
No, but it sounds like a good name for
it's
a page.
It's cool. It's kind of like different as like writers and like different sort of creatives, and then they kind of outline their like morning and daily routine, which is quite cool. But Ursula Le Guin put hers up. And it was pretty chill, like it was like get up and write, and then like later on she would make dinner, and then it's like 8 p.m. after 8 p.m. bad things happen, like don't ask me or something like that. Is it? So she must just like get drunk, like do stupid stuff.
What's her claim to fame? What's this? I don't know.
So
her.
She wrote she's written loads of stuff. I think one of her main things was the sci-fi novel The Dispossessed.
She's wrote loads of sci-fi.
Right. Okay.
She's like a sci-fi god.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
But yeah.
Random segue, but
no, it's good.
Maybe she like does weird sci-fi things at night.
Maybe.
Ooh, yeah.
She's abducted by aliens.
Black Mirror.
That's where it all comes from. Okay, so let's have our last poem of the episode. Let's have Rab Florence, recorded live at the Rum Shack in Glasgow, and this is Batman's Aff Is Nut.
Batman's Aff Is Nut. Batman's Aff Is Nut. Have you seen the way he cuts a boot dressed up as a mad fucking bat, battering guys? I was like that. Mate, I'm worried about you. I know your man dad died, but everybody's man dad dies. Well, no all running about hooking muggles and kicking psychopaths in the boys. That was when Batman went, aye, but do you ever feel like it? Do you ever look at the world and feel like it, like having a big mad bass under your house? Do you ever feel like driving a big mad motor that turns into a tank? Leathering fuck out of guys all night, scaring the fucking shite out of them. And that was when I was like that. Aye, fuck it, I do. And that's the secret origin of Robin. And everybody else.
It's interview time at the bookshop. We're going to go to Sam in the past or future to speak to our remote special guest, Imogen Sterling.
Hello, Imogen. Welcome to the bookshop.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, no worries. So we're here today to talk about your new collection, Hypocrisy. Hypocrisy or hashtag hypocrisy?
Technically hashtag hypocrisy, but it's proven difficult, so I'll take either.
What was that, just with like Facebook not algorithms but hashtags?
Yeah, they don't like hashtags, so it works really well for Instagram, works really well for Twitter. Facebook does not work.
Oh shit.
It's all right, it's all good.
No, that's cool. So that's your new show, your old show. It was at the Fringe in 2018.
Yes, that's right.
In book form, with speculative books, how have you found the process of putting it all down?
It's been really nice. It's been really nice because I've been kind of doing the show for a few months now, I haven't really looked at the script for a long time. So it was so cool just to like get it in front of me and really kind of properly appreciate the language again and kind of see it written down on the page. It was nice.
So is that yours? Is it like committed completely to memory then? Could you do it backwards, upside down, like
in
a snowstorm?
Yeah, it's so good. Like actually, I change it quite a lot. Like I kind of add in bits and there's a little bit of improv, depending on the show, which is nice. But yeah, I know it very well.
Do audience interaction?
Yeah, because audiences, either they are super quiet and attentive the whole way through, or they're like really kind of receptive and vocal, so there's a lot of like playing with that, which is nice.
Do they know if they're allowed to laugh or not? Or
that's like, exactly it. If you perform it in a theatre, they think they can't laugh, and if you perform it anywhere else, they're really like chill. So
oh,
it's
about white privilege.
Like, we mustn't laugh, it's really serious. It's very funny.
No, excellent. Cool. That's good. So it's been good good reviews so far then, I've seen. It looks like it's really taken off.
Yeah, yeah. People are liking it. It's good. I'm waiting on a new review today, so I'm a bit nervous.
Oh, yeah? Where's it from?
This one's from the Wii Review. Mm-hmm. I like them. I like them. I have faith. They'll be kind. Yeah. But yeah, no, people have really liked it.
Yeah, no, definitely. The Wii Review aren't too like scathing, are they? Like, hopefully not. No one's tore it apart yet, though.
Not yet. No.
When we did Robert Florence's book, he was like, get the proper reviewers in. And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, the poetry ones, the proper...
Really?
Like, the proper specific poetry reviewers. And I was like, I don't know who you're like referring to. Like,
I don't know who those are.
The poetry like Illuminati or whatever. And he was like, no, I think he really wanted it to get like... ripped to shreds. Yeah, totally. Like, to see if it would like stand up to like legitimate criticism. Yeah. We were like, I hate to break it to you, man, but we don't actually know any.
I know what he means. Like, I mean, I was really keen to get theatre reviewers rather than more like poetry reviews for my show.
Yeah.
Because I kind of wanted to see if it could, you know, be accepted in that world. Totally. So that's what I've been kind of aiming for so far.
How have you found it spreads the gap between kind of poetry and theatre thus far?
Really well. I mean, The Fringe, I kind of build it more as spoken word than theatre. But then when we got invited down to London, that was as part of a theatre programme in a theatre. And I thought, God, this is the test. But it's been grand since then. Traverse Theatre, again, more theatre-y. Even the CCA, it's all been much more like theatre-focused since then. And yeah, it's been good.
Oh, amazing. So did you have to make some changes when you first brought it into a theatre, or was it more or less the same show?
No, I changed it a little bit because I think before it was more kind of static storytelling with like a few sort of props and stuff. It was more just like the words and the music, whereas now I've kind of brought in a lot more staging and sort of movement and all that thing to make it more theatrical.
He's behind you.
Exactly.
Excellent. Nice. But no, brilliant. So the show's gone through in theatres, it's gone round. What's changed for yourself since?
It's just a lot better. Like, it started really... Honestly, I look back at some of the first drafts and it's pretty poor. So yeah, obviously, like, it's really tightened up a lot. It's just much more easy to perform. Having the second musician is, like, the biggest change, I think. Like, it's much more... With just vocals and guitar, it was a little more kind of... almost folky in a way. It was much softer, whereas the percussion has really like brought out the sort of gravity of the show, so it makes it quite a more intense thing to perform. But yeah, it's changed a lot. Like, it's been rewritten a bit, it's been restaged. It's always kind of changing.
You've started working at 404 as well.
I have.
Yeah, 404 Inc, Edinburgh's greatest publishers.
Yeah, it's exciting.
How's it been?
It's been so cool. I mean, I only... kind of officially started last month, so it's so new. Thank you. But yeah, I mean, I've loved them since they started. The team is so cool. Yeah, they're kind of like shaking everything up and like revamping the company, so it's really exciting to be part of it.
Yeah, so it's, this is the kind of, is this more the magazine, or is it in the publishing the novels as well?
Yeah, mainly for me it's the magazine, so it's kind of going through the submissions and sort of curating a set for the magazine.
We're reading submissions at the moment as well. It's like,
it's hard.
It's tough, isn't it?
Yes.
I always feel I get it cut off because I read the poetry submissions and Dale reads the short story submissions.
Right, okay.
So like, I'm like, yeah, just did 40.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, cool. Like, I've still been reading this one for you. Do you do any kind of like formatting or parts of the book or stuff like that as well? Or is it all just kind of editorial?
Mainly editorial. It's kind of the magazines are very like, definitely themed, so it's all about like coming up with the kind of cover ideas, like features, people to include, as well as the submissions, to just rework it all a lot. So it's more like the sort of creative side than the technical side.
Excellent. I think.
Yeah, it's good fun. It's really cool.
You were part of a theatre society when you were touring your Hypocrisy as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that was the one down south. Yeah, it's good. I mean, it's like the work with 404 is closely enough linked that it feels like a nice balance, but it's also separate enough that you're not like in the weird like poetry performance like mindset all the time. So it's it's nice. They go hand in hand. It's cool.
Are you going to bring it back to the Fringe 2019?
Not this show, I don't think. I think it's done its bit at the Fringe. We're doing the Prague Fringe instead, which I think will be nice.
Nice.
But I don't think this one's necessary to go back to Edinburgh.
Yeah, Lael Josephine and Loud Poets did the Prague Fringe last year.
Yeah, that's right.
I heard, yeah, it looks like a great
It looks so nice. Scene.
You'll have to go over to the Canadian Fringe.
I would love to. Well, Ross, the guitarist, he's going to Canada. So oh, I'm like, oh, shit. There's a link here.
Man, fucking Kevin Gilday went and did the Canadian Fringe.
Did he?
Yeah, he said he just took had to take an extra suitcase filled with books. Yeah, it was amazing. Like, I just imagine Kevin Gilday cutting about Canada with this fucking like heavy suitcase, like complaining about the cold.
Yeah, right. Oh, that's so cool.
No, definitely. Yeah, to have up. And Rachel McCrum's out there as well.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, totally. So, yeah, Canada Fringe. There's totally. A scene. Watch out, Canada, if you're listening to this podcast now. I don't know when their Fringe is, actually, if it's in August or September.
Yeah, I have no idea, but...
Yeah. Well, it's been awfully nice having you, and I'm sure I'll see you at a show very soon.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Speculative Books is a publishing company based in Scotland. We publish a new book every month. Subscribe today from £6.99 and have a book of poetry sent direct to your door every month with free UK postage and packaging. Pulling from a wide range of forms and styles, the Speculative subscription is an essential purchase for any poetry lover. Find out more at www.speculativebooks.net.
And now it's time for our special mystery short story.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Who could it be?
12 steps and a light bulb moment. Craig. So you have this terrible illness and then you get lucky, get better, and you promise yourself you'll never waste another minute of your life again. You'll live every second to the full. But it doesn't work that way, and pretty soon you're back to the bad old ways. You just wasted your second chance. Vary. I saw him from a distance walking down Argyle Street, heading straight towards me. It was peeing with rain, so town wasn't that busy. No easy to dodge him. I'd thought I'd be able to dodge him forever since he'd moved away. At first it looked like he had a Glasgow tan, but as he got closer he seemed more yellow than orange. Jaundice. Could get a part in The Simpsons. That fucking Jade's always got something to say about me being stupid, so just so we're clear, I know The Simpsons is a cartoon and Craig's real. Vary, doll, he says. Been a while, eh? Aye, Craig, says I. Let's see now. There was the night you nicked my weed at that party we went to together. The party you left with Big Angie and my weed. And of course, the last night we were all together at Davies. Who could forget that? Special. His face crumpled and I felt bad. He clearly wasn't a well man, and there's me giving him a hard time about stuff that happened over a year ago. He used to be no a bad looking guy in a rugged Colin Farrell, looks like he could maybe do with a good bath way. I went easy on him. You look like shite, Craig. He laughed, but it looked like laughing hurt. Cheers, doll, that fear cheered me up. Aye, no been too good. Got some mad virus and stuff started packing in. Liver, kidneys, you know, stuff. Heading for the big off for a while, but they reckon I'm in the mend now. I'll be back looking like Johnny Depp soon. I was thinking, aye, maybe Johnny Depp and Fear and Loathing, but I was being nice. Sounds like you've been a hell of a bad run, eh? Then I had to get another dig in, couldn't help myself. So are you clean, off everything, or still just taking everybody else's? I swear I thought he was going to greet. He took his hands out his pocket and held them up in surrender. Fair comment. The rain ran down the sleeves of his old blue fleece, and when I saw his wrists, I realised how thin he'd become. I'm sorry, Craig. Past is past. I shouldn't be nipping at you. He shook his head, fast and violent, like a wet dog, the rain flying off his hair and hitting the hood of my jacket as he leaned in close. No, fair dues. That's why I'm back for a couple of weeks. Want to say I'm sorry. Not just to you, to all of yous that I treated like shit back then. See, I know it'll sound a bit wanky, but I feel like I'm getting a second chance. I want to do better. To be better. Well, I nearly laughed in his face, but he looked like a poor wee soul. I wrapped my arms round him. In the past, he'd have tried to cop a feel, but he just patted my back, said thanks, and walked away. I can never keep my stupid mouth shut. Craig, fancy a drink one night? I'll get everyone together and we'll have a laugh, eh? Oh, that's good of you, but I'm off it. staying out the pubs and temptation till I've got it beat. But I'll come round for a blether one night, eh? Cup of tea and a blether. I nodded. Aye, that'd be great. Jesus, cup of tea and a blether with a reformed Craig McNichol. Couldn't he wait? Big Angie. Barry Sweeney phoned about Craig to warn me. Typical Barry, dead dramatic. She's a nice enough lassie, face like a camel chewing a wasp, but no harm in her. I don't care if Craig's back, if he's ill, if he's pure yellow, like she said. That's all behind me now. That whole crowd and the drink and the drugs and the mad parties. I don't do any of that since I got engaged to Ralph. Ralph's a restaurant critic for the local paper, and we move in different circles, know what I mean? Barry reckons Craig will be in touch. Says he's doing some kind of 12-step jig around Glasgow, making amends for everything he ever did wrong. He'd never live that long, daft bugger. The way Craig ended up, there's no many people he didn't rip off or piss off. Great guy till he was blutered, then he was your worst nightmare. Fine with drugs, especially weed, he just fell asleep. I have cause to remember that because one night he actually fell asleep, well, let's just say on top of me, after a party where he'd found some and we went back to mine. But the drink made him mental. He'd do anything for a laugh. At first we egged him on, climb that lamppost, pee in that letterbox, shag that gnome. He did it all, but sometimes he took it too far, did dangerous stuff. Last time I saw him must have been about a year ago. We were all at Davies. Davies no got many real pals. His skin looks like somebody attacked him with a cheese grater. I think it's maybe eczema. He's off his chesty all the time, heavy breather and coughing fits. But if you can get past that, decent guy. Always happy for folk to hang out at his place and get wasted, as long as they share and don't make a mess. Know what I mean? Kept his flat weird neat and made us use all these wee cork coasters for our cans. He had antimacassars. Only person outside my granny's that's ever had them in their chairs, as far as I know. So that night, the rest of us smoked some weed, but Craig had taken acid and then started in the vodka. Bad idea. Davy started talking about this guy he saw on the telly who could eat weird stuff and bring it up whole. Me and Vary thought it was disgusting, but Craig and that fucking jade who informs us all the guy must be a regurgitator were dead into it, asking Davy to list all the stuff the guy ate. Davy's like that. Tennis ball, goldfish, needles, light bulb. It's when he says light bulb that Craig's eyes get wider, and we all know what he's thinking, but it's that fucking jade that says it. Do it, Craig. And she gives him one of her sweetest smiles. That's the thing about her. Dead pretty, dead wee girly, the guys all fall for it. But deep down, she's a twisted wee bitch. Do it, Craig, she says again. We're all saying, don't do it, Craig, really don't do it. But Craig's reaching for the bulb, and Davy's telling him to at least let it cool down. Aye, because getting a burnt tongue is the big issue here. And Craig eats the light bulb. Cup of tea with Craig at Vary's. I suppose I'll have to so he can get through his 12 steps, but after that, I'm done with a lot of them forever. Davy. Craig ate a light bulb at my house one night, never even replaced it. I had to buy a new one. That's taking liberties. He spewed up blood all over the place. He's no getting back in here, ever. But I'll go to Vary's for a cup of tea with him. Maybe he'll square me up for a new bulb. The antimacassar's cleaned up okay, but I'll be talking to that fucking jade about them anyway. That fucking jade. I heard Craig's back. Haven't seen him since he had his light bulb moment. That's what he called it when he could talk again, once the cuts had healed. They all blame me. Big Angie says I egged him on. I'd never argue with her. She's got those upside down legs. And the last time I saw an arse that big, my hook was hitting it with a stick. So I took the blame at the time. Vary says I slipped him a tab. Aye, like you'd need to force anything on Craig. Vary's as thick as mince, so there's no point even talking to her. Davy says I mopped up the blood with his antimacassars. I've never touched his antimacassars. It's all bullshit. I was there. I got drunk with Craig, but when he decided to eat the light bulb, how was Andy supposed to know he had no idea how to do it properly? It wasn't my fault, and I'm sure he'll agree when we all meet at Vary's for that cup of tea they didn't bother their arses inviting me for. Vary. A week after the day I met Craig in Argyle Street, we all met for a cup of tea at my place. It started off badly and went downhill from there. I'd invited Davy and Big Angie, who's got even bigger. Ralph must launch her out the house like a barge every day, then feed her up in those restaurants he reviews. I think that's how he gets his kicks. I think he's a feeder, making her fatter and fatter. Shuddersome. Anyway, then that fucking Jade turned up saying Craig would want her there more than anybody, and she'd every right and understood his pain and had an O grade in psychology and could totally help. Angie shrugged. Davy had been in the toilets for ages. He does that. So I had nobody to help me keep her out. Craig arrived at the door looking better, almost a normal colour. I let him in, but there was something not right. Craig, have you been drinking? I thought you said you were off it. He smiled, all sheepish. Just one pint, doll. Hit me hard, though. It's all good. Just one pint with stench. We all exchanged Christ, not stench. Craig is clearly stoned out his box looks. Stench is the biggest waster on the estate. One pint in my arse. Then Craig hugged everybody. He couldn't get his arms all the way around Big Angie and ended up with his face stuck in her boobs. Then he had a fit of the giggles and groped me. He tried to snog that fucking Jade, but she dodged him, patted him on the back and said she understood. Cow. He went for Davy next. Davy doesn't like being touched and freaked out, saying he wanted money for a light bulb. When he heard the word light bulb, Craig backed off and went, oh, aye, nearly forgot. He had this creepy smile on his face. We were all like, fuck, no, no way, Craig. Even that fucking Jade shook her head. I ran for the table lamp and got there well before him, so we thought we were safe. No way he could climb onto a chair and reach the big light in the state he was in. He put his hand in his pocket, started laughing. He'd brought his own. Craig. The first night I ate the light bulb, just a laugh. Never knew you're no meant to chew. Always wondered if I'd known that, would it have been different? Stench was so sure I'd get it right the second time. So you have this terrible illness and then you get lucky, get better, and you promise yourself you'll never waste another minute of your life again. But you bump into a loser like Stench, stumble over one of those steps. You don't remember how the bulb got in your pocket. You just know it's choking you and you've wasted your second chance.
Well, oh. Chaps, which I use as a...
as a term for everyone.
Yeah, it's just like a general non-specific term for humans.
A chapette.
Chapette. I was going to say chaps and chapette, and I was like, I'd rather just pretend that chaps is gender neutral.
I'd rather just pretend Ashley wasn't here.
I've been trying... You see a lot of people using lads... No, it's a non-gender thing.
I do it, but like I realise
that...
Yeah.
Like, a full room.
Right, lads.
Right, lads. Yeah. But I realise that that's what I'm doing in my head, but it's not what I'm actually doing, because I'm still using the word lads. So yeah. And I can't just make it mean something else.
Oh, well, gentlemen.
Yeah.
It's wonderful to see you, gents. See, because I work with, like, mostly men.
Yeah.
Like, 99% men. It's fucking brilliant because they're all... No, but see, when there is a woman, it's fucking mental, because, like, see when you're up at training or something like that, and they're like boys with a net. Oh, sorry, boys and girls, you know, and they make it just really awkward, you know. And Lass is like, well, thanks for that. You know what I mean? You really fucking made me feel awkward now, so thank you for that.
It's when people apologise for swearing in front of women.
Oh,
well,
that happens so often. My favourite, most recent one was, again, the training thing, and somebody asked a question about, well, what if this happened? And the guy said, listen, pal, I've got fucking hairy balls, not crystal balls. And then, oh, sorry! Sorry, hen! And it's like, oh, for fuck's sake. Yeah, less of that.
All right. Let me try again, then. Right, peeps.
Oh, no, I don't like peeps.
You don't like peeps?
I like peeps.
I think peeps is all right.
Peeps, we'll catch you on the red.
Peeps spell P-E-P-Y-S, like Samuel Peeps.
I don't know
cut that out. That was a terrible joke. We'll cut that out. I'll cut it out. It's me that cuts it out. I'll cut it out here.
Leo, cut this out.
Leo,
okay,
cut
Leo,
this out.
All right,
Leo.
This
no
is,
problem.
This is,
done.
This is,
yeah. Samuel.
Who the fuck is Samuel Peeps?
Samuel Peeps wrote the diary of Samuel Peeps.
It's fucking this subpure weird. Are you savvy peeps?
I feel like we're back at Thames thing with when we're all the cat.
We're all the cat. We're all Samuel Peeps.
Steve Coogan played him in a BBC dramatization called The Diary of Samuel Peeps. I'm not.
Do you send yourself love letters, Samuel Peeps?
I'm sure Samuel. Edit this out.
Yeah. Calling all bookshop staff and visitors. It's closing time at the bookshop.
It's closing time.
I don't know. You sounded like you knew the song you were singing. I was just going to sing the words. It's closing time.
But you didn't. You just said, it's closing time.
It's closing time.
It sounded like the first line of fucking Band-Aid. It's closing time.
Yeah. It's closing time. I think that's what I've been singing in my head. Wet and light and vanishing. There's a world outside the bookshop.
A world of dread and fear.
I don't want to leave.
Tonight, it's there. It's there, you. Fuck off, Bono.
Oh, God.
You've been tilt.
Right. A long one.
Yeah. Right.
I'm going to go.
Cheers, Sam.
Bye. No worries.
Have a nice time.
I'm away too. Bye.
Bye, Natalie.
Right, I'm off.
All right, Dale.
See you later, mate.
All right, well, I'm going to take off as well. Let's have some music. I'm not even going to tidy the shop this time. I'm just going to go home. But I am going to leave some music on in the shop so that robbers don't think that it's empty and come in and steal all the books. So I'm going to put on Passion by Black Doves.
When I was at school, they treated me like a fool, and I hated it with great passion. Passion, passion. Who needs happiness when you get passion? Passion, passion. Who needs happiness when you get passion? For fashion, passion for fashion. What have I got? Darling, I can't hear you. What have I got? Passion.